from Springfield. This is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It has to be a compromise. We've always said for the last 2 years, reforms before revenue, and this is what we're proposing. The major tenets of the legislation that we introduced last week need to stay in put, and I think that there's always room, always open to some type of negotiation, but the fact is, substantial conformance with what we have introduced is important for the purposes of seeking the governor's support.
The governor has made some nice statements. He hasn't engaged with us. He's made different requests in different areas. We've responded very well. He then continues to ask for more. So you know, he's a very difficult person to bargain with, to engage with. There's a 2.5-year record of where he moves the goalpost at all times. And I think you can find witnesses to that in the building.
That's the House Speaker and Democrat Michael Madigan. Before him, the House Republican leader Jim Durkin. Democrats and Republicans weighing in as a special session got underway this week. In fact, the first of several that are likely to last through the end of the month. If you thought being in special session would result in a quick resolution to the budget impasse, it looks like you were way off. With only about a week left before the new fiscal year, is there hope for a deal? We're going to talk about that and more on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse studio, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio Statehouse reporter, and government reporter for WBEZ, Tony Arnold, joins us from Chicago today. Tony, good to have you on once again.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And Brian and Tony, I guess I'll start with you. There have been meetings taking place between some of the top leaders, including both the House Republican leader Jim Durkin, the House Speaker Michael Madigan. But is anything moving? Have we heard anything behind the scenes or out in the open that we're getting any closer to some type of budget agreement?
Well, as you said, meetings, sadly, at this point, a meeting between Republicans and Democrats, at least outside the Senate, is kind of news and some ray of hope here, because they, particularly the House Speaker and the governor, I guess, have had one face-to-face meeting this year, at least that's been reported publicly that I've seen. And so to have the House Speaker meet with Republican leader Jim Durkin is kind of a big deal, because there has been very little progress toward any sort of resolution, at least publicly, in the House. So, yeah, there's been meetings, but, I mean, there certainly hasn't been any sort of unveiling of a true compromise legislation where both sides agree to it. The Republicans have put forth what they say is their attempt at a compromise. Well, they don't say that. That's me characterizing it. They just call it the compromise plan. But, you know, it's basically their attempt at saying, well, this is as far as we can go. We can negotiate on the margins. But as we heard Leader Durkin say at the top of the show, it's got to have these elements in it. You know, term limits for statewide elected officials. It's got to have changes to the workers' compensation system. It's got to have these things that the governor has really been asking for 2 years now. The speaker still says, well, my priority has always been balancing the budget through cuts and revenues. And he's been saying that for 2 years, and here we are. But at least they are meeting.
I think I'd add to that, there's already been some, I guess, some changes. And since the start of the special session on Wednesday of this week, you know, since from where it started to where it is now, because where this started, when the governor announced lawmakers need to come back for 10 days till the end of the month, the response to that from Senate President John Cullerton was, we don't need special sessions. We need Republicans to basically stage a coup against Governor Rauner and have Republicans get on board with this Senate budget plan, and which is really in competition with what the Republicans have introduced as their budget plan. So you have these two competing interests here. And since Cullerton basically called for this Republican coup, which obviously is not happened or going to happen, the fact that the speaker then has met with House Republican leader Jim Durkin is a very different stage, I'd say, than where this thing started with calling for the other side to go against their own leader, the guy that would need to sign the bills.
Charlie, usually when a budget is put together, at least in the past, it involved the top leaders and the governor getting together. They would work out the details, and then they'd take those back to their rank and file, and eventually there would be a vote up or down. And that makes me question, why have the entire legislature come back for all of these days of special session at a taxpayer cost when nothing has worked out?
Well, that's a pretty good question. It's one I asked myself. And basically, it's showbiz. It's the governor trying to look like he's doing something. And it's a waste of money. Now, maybe for somebody in his income bracket, spending $40,000, $50,000 a day is no big deal. But for most of us, it is. And as a matter of fact, I know some TV operations were taking cheap shots because in the Senate, not everybody showed up. And, oh, this is terrible. What would happen to me if I didn't show up for work? And I'm thinking to myself, God bless the people who didn't show up, because that's per diem and mileage that we're not having to pay. And you're right, Sean, the way it's always been, or at least during, I shouldn't say always, but during the years I was covering the legislature, and it was 20-some years, the norm was that we'd have this partisan bickering through like the first two-thirds of the session. And then the leaders and the governor would say, okay, now it's time to be grown-ups. We're going to put away all this childish nonsense. We get in a room. We hash out the details. What do you need? Here's what I need. How far can you go on this? I can go so far on this other thing. Take it back to the caucuses, see what they think. And they'd come to an agreement. And sometimes you did have special sessions, but it would not be called until there was something ready to vote on, simply because they didn't want to waste the money.
And I think that's the most stunning part to me, is it's one thing if you brought them all back and you're having all of these meetings, but it doesn't seem as though those meetings are taking place, so there's not a lot for these folks to do at this point. Is the governor hoping, as anybody know, if the governor's just hoping that there will be some, I'll use the term coup again, but maybe on the Democratic side, the Democratic lawmakers will say, hey, House Speaker Michael Madigan, let's get something done?
I mean, I think that's certainly a hope, right? That's been the governor's hope all along, is that he could convince Democrats to turn against the speaker, their allies in unions. He's always had this idea that he might be able to turn Democrats. Well, I mean, he was very blunt about it back in 2012 before he was even running. He talked about using social justice spending, social service spending as a wedge to divide Democrats over their support for public employee unions. But more recently, he put when he came into office, he started a PAC, a political action committee, a fundraising committee that would, you know, support Democrats who supported his turnaround agenda, as he called it. And I think that's always been a hope. I mean, I guess looking at the special session, you know, looking at it in its most positive light, it is focusing public attention on the problems in Illinois government. And remarkably, after 2 years of budget impasse, I think that's still a problem. You still have polls that have said that a majority of Illinoisans think the impasse is not affecting them. I would argue, and other people would argue, that they just don't maybe realize how it's affecting them and affecting their communities, because it's a lot of the effects of it are invisible. You don't see the social service agencies, you know, that help the homeless teenagers who have to shut down programs, things like that. Looking at it in a more, you know, cynical way, you could say that the governor is trying to insulate himself from whatever happens if there is no budget. He's out there. He's now got these TV clips. You know, he delivered this video message that I guess a few TV stations in Illinois carried live on Tuesday night. He was in the old state capitol, and he has repeatedly been using the word compromise. That's kind of been remarkable to watch around here during, you know, the Republicans call it their compromise budget. The governor used the word compromise again and again. Even the groups that are allied with Republicans, when they were testifying at the workers' compensation hearing, were using the word compromise. There's really a lot of coordination on that side of the aisle to use the word compromise, because they want to project that they are the ones trying to, you know, be the ones who make a deal. And, you know, if there is no budget, which seems like, based on 2 years of past experience, certainly a possibility, a political possibility, then at least he can say, look, I'm the one out there. I was trying to do the compromise. He'll have these video clips, a TV anchor saying, governor gave a speech calling for compromise, and we don't have a budget. So that's sort of the more cynical way of looking at it.
Well, Tony, you've reported on this Republican, what we call the compromise plan they put forward, but they're calling that. You pointed out some of the things that were in that, including, you know, a property tax freeze. That seems like you could get at least some Democrats to support that, to go along with the Republicans to pass that. What seems to be really the sticking point then in getting a budget deal if some of these things have bipartisan support?
The sticking point, the big one, is raising income taxes. That's what it's coming down to, and you're getting pressure. You know, each party's putting pressure on their own leaders, and so this is about at this point in time, I think that a lot of this is about rank and file members' relationships with their own party's leadership. Look at the Republicans, for instance. Governor Rauner, in his speech introducing the special sessions that Brian was talking about, the call for unity, he basically said, "I support this Republican plan that does call for an income tax hike. It also calls for tax hikes on tattoo parlors or streaming services like Netflix." And this is problematic for a lot of Republicans. They're getting pressure from some of their own supporters to what are you doing? Why are you supporting this? You've been you ran your campaign for Governor Rauner, on lowering the income tax rate, even lower than what it is now, and now you're calling for a tax hike? What's going on with that? So there's pressure on the Republicans to not go along with that plan, from the outside at least. And then on the Democratic side, you have representatives from Chicago that have been saying, yes, we need this higher income tax hike. We should all take this vote. But they don't have enough to carry it on their own. They would need Republican supports. There's not enough votes even to get a simple majority, even though Democrats are in the majority in the House. So there's this divide within the Democratic Party about taking this sensitive vote to raise taxes just because it's going to be such a polarizing issue for the next year and a half leading up to next year's campaigns. And on the Republican side, it's you campaigned on lowering taxes, and now you're saying that you're okay with raising them. Go ahead.
Sorry, I would just add two things to what you're saying. Not only did they campaign past tense on not raising taxes, they are actively campaigning now. I live in a district that is represented by a Democrat. I'm getting mailers at home attacking this Democrat for supporting Mike Madigan's tax increase budget. The governor has these TV ads out there attacking Speaker Madigan for wanting to raise your taxes with no reforms. And it's true, the Republicans, they introduced this compromise plan. They say they'll support a tax increase, but I think it's interesting and worth noting that their plan, it includes bills to deal with state spending. It spends at a level that assumes there would be a tax increase, but there's not actually a tax increase bill in their plan. So far, no Republican in the legislature that I'm aware of, at least as of this taping, has put their name on a bill as a sponsor of an amendment or the bill itself to actually raise taxes. And this, again, goes to the question of trust around here. I think Charlie has said before, everybody needs to hold hands and jump off the cliff together on something like this, a tax increase. And I just, you have the Republicans sort of dipping their toe in the water, but from the Democratic perspective, not going as far as they might have. Senate Democrats especially say, look, we took the risk. We put our votes on a tax hike, on a balanced budget, using the governor's numbers that he introduced, and they want to see the Republicans go as far. But, as Tony said, it is significant. You can parse it and say, well, there was never a bill, but now the governor is at least on the record in this forum of supporting more revenue.
And I would just add, to Charlie's point earlier about how they're not actually doing much of anything right now. I mean, Cullerton said leading up to this that he would not give the Republican plan a hearing even until one of the Republicans put their name as the chief sponsor of a bill raising taxes. And until that happens, they're not going to get a hearing, which is why the Senate's been very quiet so far.
Charlie, when it comes to taxes, usually what we've seen in the past is there's a give and take. If you're going to vote for a tax, there's going to be something for it. Maybe it's projects. Maybe it's some other program that's being funded by it. Is there enough on the table right now for lawmakers to vote for taxes? Is that a big part of this problem, that there's not enough incentive?
Well, I haven't read all the bills, but my understanding is that one of the provisions, or some of the provisions in the so-called capital compromise that the Republicans put forward, where their left hand agreed with their right hand, includes money for what are called earmarks, public works projects in individual legislators' districts. And as I say, I have not read the bill. I will confess that up front. But typically what happens is those types of projects are an incentive for a lawmaker to vote for increased revenue, because the lawmaker can come back and say, yeah, you're going to have to pay a little more for, you know, when you want to buy a six-pack of beer. But on the other hand, the high school gym is getting a new roof. And you know that road out in front that's got all those potholes? Those are going to be taken care of. So there are tangible, physical benefits that the constituent can see came from the increased revenue. The difficulty in this case is that a lot of the new money is going to have to go to pay off old bills. So it's going to be harder to say, here's this bright, new, shiny thing you got for paying more. It's like, well, we're going to catch up on all the bills that we should have paid years ago.
And, of course, that you could make an argument then that's the price of not doing anything for long. So you've made your bed. You have to lie in it.
Yeah. You look at the pension systems, and they're, $130 billion unfunded liability for the five pension systems for which the state is responsible. Those have been underfunded for more than 100 years. So it's not that it's all Mike Madigan's fault or Bruce Rauner's fault or Pat Quinn or anybody like that. This goes back involving lawmakers and governors of both parties for a century. And the reason is the temptation always was to spend on stuff that helps people right now rather than put aside money for a future that you know will come, but not until you're out of office. And so the electorate has kind of been conditioned to expect we can have all this stuff and we don't really have to pay what we should be paying, and we're covering it to a certain extent by not funding pensions, but that's something that's way off in the future. Well, today we are in that future.
Brian, where do we go from here? I mean, we have about a week before the end of the fiscal year. I know that the House has scheduled some different hearings on topics and such, but nothing that seems to get us that much closer to really negotiating a budget. Is there any feeling as though things will ramp up in the last few days of the special sessions, or is there a target that people feel has to be reached by a certain day, anything like that?
I don't know about that. I mean, in terms of, actually the bills, some of these bills are new bills. They would have to be read on three different days in each chamber if it was going to be the Republican bills that they introduced. A lot of those have never been through the Senate, so they would have to get out of the House at least 3 days before the end of the, or I guess, yeah, 3 days before the end of the fiscal year, so they could be just meet the procedural benchmarks that are required. Of course, if they do come to an agreement, there are ways of finding a different bill, and I won't get it bogged down in the procedure. I guess still the big deadline here is June 30th. That's what the credit rating agencies have said. That's what the Illinois Department of Transportation has said is their deadline for shutting down road projects in Illinois. That's what the interstate lotteries, Powerball and Mega Millions, that say they're going to force Illinois to suspend ticket sales and not let them participate in those. They've set June 30th as the deadline. That seems to be what everyone is looking at. There have been a lot of absences from the legislature. People have vacation plans. And, as I think we said earlier in the show, Charlie's pointed out, if you don't have a deal, everybody who is familiar with this process down here knows there's really no reason for it's not like their vote is going to be crucial at this early stage if there's no overall deal. So I don't think people felt, that compelled to necessarily interrupt vacation plans or travel plans or anything else they might have had to be down here. The parking lots are relatively empty for what still feels like a session day inside the building.
Here's a question I have, too. Is June 30th really the day? And the reason I say that, it occurs to me June 30th will be a Friday. At midnight on Friday, and the state hasn't done anything, are the bond rating agencies going to call an emergency meeting to lower the credit ratings? Or might they wait until Monday? So might that give everybody another 2 days?
That's all they need, Charlie. That's a good idea.
Well,
why don't you give them more time?
It might, but I wouldn't be surprised if they had these credit downgrades drafted in their email outbox or email drafts folder waiting to hit send. And sure enough,
1201 many times before.
Well, 1201 or even when they adjourn without having a deal. All right, if they adjourn it at 6 p.m. that night, and we saw this, I mean, last week there were some Friday afternoon downgrades of state universities, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I've lost track.
Yeah.
So that would not be unprecedented, and they have given so many warnings here. Now, what practical effect? I mean, the markets, I'm getting way out of my area of expertise here to understand weekend trading and overnight trading and foreign trading and stuff like that. I don't know that, you know, you would necessarily see a lot of, immediate market action. I don't think Illinois will be going to try to, do any another round of bond sales on Saturday morning or anything like that. But it would not surprise me if we started to see some of those. And, you know, road construction does happen 7 days a week in some areas. And if the Department of Transportation shuts that down, or even if they start shutting that down early, and I think lottery sales happen on the weekends too. So those are, but there are things that won't change, right? Court orders are making sure state employees get paid. And as long as Illinois has enough money coming into its coffers to cut those paychecks, it is under court order to do so. But then we have this other wrinkle of this case that Tony's been following up in Chicago with Judge Lefkoe involving Medicaid providers. And if that that could come to a head a couple days before the end of the fiscal year. So it's really, there's just a lot of plate spinning right now, and it's not clear when they're going to start to fall, but it seems, it does feel different this year, I would say, overall, heading into this deadline, even than it did a month ago, than it did a year ago, that things are really starting to come apart at the seams.
Well, part of the difficulty, and the comptroller, Susana Mendoza, has pointed this out, yeah, we have all these court orders and these continuing appropriations in law, and the judge ordering state workers to be paid. And so she's been in the situation of having a dollar and 95 cents of it are already committed, and she's got a nickel that she has to figure out how to use for everything else. If the federal court says, now you also have to include that, what is it, $1 billion, $2 billion, of Medicaid costs, suddenly she's still got the dollar, but now she has $1.05 that she has to spend. And so the question is, which court order, which consent decree, which statutory requirement does she violate?
And Tony, why don't you give us, if you can, just a quick update on where that case stands as far as we know at this point?
Where it stands is next week. Mendoza's supposed to announce where that money's going to come from that Charlie's talking about. She has said it's either going to be skipping pension payments or delaying schools, payments to schools. She has said that she won't or that she will continue to pay down debt service. So it's going to be either schools or pensions that don't get the money in order to comply with this Medicaid ruling so that doctors and healthcare organizations continue to see Medicaid payments. There's supposed to be some kind of formal announcement, though, next week to the judge about where that money's going to come from.
And Tony, while we have a couple of minutes here left, we might say these are political issues that are being played out at the State House right now, and we're months away from next year's primaries, especially for governor, but politics were definitely on display in Cook County this week. You covered some of that. What took place?
What took place is before every election around this time, the Cook County Democratic Party, the storied party here, has candidates come up and give their spiel about why the Cook County Democratic Party should endorse them and their candidacy ahead of the primary. So you had five of the candidates running for Illinois governor, hoping to get the nomination to take on Rauner one-on-one, giving their speech. And you had, I'll just go down the list real quick, Bob Diber, who's from downstate Madison County, kind of setting the tone for the day about, he gave a speech to them a few months ago saying, I'm from downstate, you guys are Cook County, I don't know you, you don't know me, I don't know how you could endorse me. Flash forward to yesterday, Diber said, you know what? I could really use your endorsement. There's a lot of Democrats in Cook County, and they could really help out my campaign. So that kind of sets the tone about how important this endorsement is if it actually happens. Perhaps the most notable statement of the day came from Chris Kennedy, though, who asked that the party not make an endorsement. He says leave it up to the voters. Now, there's a few ways to read into that. One of the most popular ways is that means Chris Kennedy's not likely to get it, the endorsement, and so this is his way of saying, no, let the voters decide. Don't let the party insiders decide. I'll leave it up to people, though, to decide how to interpret it. Then you had J.B. Pritzker, whose main pitch to the party officials are, I can self-fund my campaign. I'm going to not have to come to you to help me pay for TV ads or that kind of thing, because J.B. Pritzker is a billionaire, one of the richest people in the world, who has already put $14 million of his own money into his campaign. So he's basically saying, my money can support my campaign. That leaves you more money to build up your own infrastructure for advertising, other candidates, Democratic candidates, that kind of thing. State Senator Daniel Biss, Chicago Alderman Amaya Pawar, also spoke to the party officials. They did ask for their endorsement, although they both have also kind of addressed this idea of against the party insiders as well.
And just finally, is it often that they do not endorse? Do they always endorse? I don't remember if they have ever not endorsed.
That's a good question. I think last time they did choose Pat Quinn over, at the time, Bill Daley. Although I think Bill Daley shortly around that time took his own name out of the running for governor after he kind of saw that the writing was on the wall that a lot of the Democratic Party officials were sticking with Pat Quinn for re-election. I don't know if the party's ever not endorsed, although it's been a while since there's been a crowded primary like this for Illinois governor.
2002, really, probably, right?
Probably, yeah. And I don't know how it went in 2002. I'll get an answer for you for next time.
Okay. Time now for our notes from the field. Charlie, we'll start with you.
Well, one of the sticking points between the governor and the Democrats in the legislature is this notion of a property tax freeze, not allowing local governments to request more going forward than they did this year from property taxes. The Senate Democrats have approved a 2-year freeze. The governor wants a 4-year freeze. And so a logical person might say, oh, you want 2, you want 4? We'll split the difference. We'll do 3. But here's an interesting thing, food for thought that I'll throw out there. The U.S. Census Bureau every year surveys all, 35,000 or however many there are, local school districts. No, it's not 35. It's like 15,000 school districts across the country. And they put out a report. And the most recent one came out last week, and it talked about what share of the school cost comes from the state, which share comes local, which from the feds. All of our neighboring states contribute more in state funds towards their schools than we do. That's no secret. We're near the bottom. But if we were to fund our local schools at the same level, the same percentage with state money as they do in Indiana, of all places, there would be roughly $7.5 billion that could be abated in property taxes, which would be a real boon to property taxpayers. So think about that for a while.
That will do it for today's State Week. Members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Tony Arnold of WBEZ. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.